Welcome to episode 66. I'm Stuart McCullough. I'm the CEO of VHAA. And starting with this week's industrial roundup, and in particular with community health as it continues to make its way through a year of intensive bargaining. With respect to the allied health professionals, we attended the Fair Work Commission to continue interest-based bargaining on the 28th of May. A final session of the Fair Work Commission is scheduled for the 15th of June, but we have additional meetings, including on the 12th of June, to continue bargaining with VAPA. For those members that are being affected by industrial action, we are meeting regularly with those members to provide support to them, and we'd like to thank those members who have made themselves available to attend those bargaining sessions at the Fair Work Commission. We have put our proposal to the Health Workers Union with respect to health and allied managers and administrative employees, and we're confident that the response to that proposal will be constructive. We are meeting with the Medical Scientists Union on Thursday. That's the union that covers dietitians and psychologists and others. And we have been working our way through their counter-proposal to our offer. We've also written to the relevant departmental official with respect to the proposed Long Service Benefits Portability Bill 2018. A copy of that letter is available on the VHA community app. The key concerns that we've identified are the scope of the operation of that bill and overlap, but secondly also with regards to the cost that would be visited upon community health members. With respect to health services, we're bargaining with Professionals Australia on Tuesday with respect to general dentists and focusing on some drafting of the clauses where there is agreement between the parties. We have our Metro HRIR managers meeting on Wednesday, followed by a meeting of the overarching reference group. The overarching reference group will be focusing on a document that outlines long service leave scenarios. And we'll also be focusing on a draft list of clauses for review as part of our EBA review process. Once we get the input from the overarching reference group, that list will then proceed to the various reference groups, to the HRIR managers' meetings to get further input, and that will really determine the work for the review process as we move forward. We have a meeting on Friday that we're attending with the Rural Health Senior Nurse Executive Group, and just a reminder to those members, with regards to the upcoming EBA forums for the Doctors in Training and Medical Specialists Agreement, if you haven't yet had a chance to register, whilst those forums are conducted free of charge, registration is essential, so we would encourage you to get your registration in. As always, all of our activities are summarised through the VHAA community app. And that's it for this week's Industrial Roundup.
Welcome to this week's podcast. Today we are joined by Principal Consultant Alec Dejonoff to discuss the rosters clause within the Medical Scientist EBA. Welcome, Alec.
Thank you, Rem. It's wonderful to be here.
Thank you. Before we get started, could you please remove the box in front of you to reveal the mystery item?
With some reluctance, I'll do just that.
Thank you. For the benefit of those who are listening to today's podcast rather than watching, could you describe the items?
Well, one is an old-fashioned vinyl LP titled Roy Orbison, The Big O.
The Big O.
And the other is some hideous creature that looks like a rather elaborate buttered jar.
Thank you, Alec. But you couldn't have been more wrong.
I'm shocked to hear that.
Let's say that the glass chicken is in fact a rooster. We also have a record by Roy Orbison, better known as the Big O. If you have
You take
rooster,
one O out and you get rooster. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Jumping into the next topic, from a historical perspective, the rosters clause in the current agreement didn't exist in the previous agreement.
That's correct.
Okay. What clause did exist in the previous agreement?
The previous agreement had a simple roster clause that simply delineated how it's to be displayed so that it's accessible to all those who are affected by it.
Yeah, okay. So the provisions in the current agreement, would you say, are new?
It is new, it's significantly new for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, okay. So broadly speaking, there are two obligations in the rosters clause, the rostering principles and the rostering protocols.
Yes, that's correct. And there's a little backstory to that. The new round of negotiations really dwelt very heavily on the issues of workload.
Yep.
And the equitable distribution of workload.
Yep.
This was a growing issue in pathology laboratories and in pharmacies in particular.
Yep.
And there was a broad acceptance by all parties that that workload issues had to be addressed in a constructive and positive way rather than in a punitive way.
Yeah, okay. So I suppose arising out of the SDPP, one of those things is the study proposal on rostering practices.
Yes, well, as everyone knows, the SDP agreement makes provision for a number of things. One is the creation of a relief pool.
Yep.
For both scientists in pathology departments and pharmacy. Creation of roster practices and the study of optimal rostering arrangements into the future.
Yeah.
The parties have agreed to engage an academic service,
yeah,
who, subject to funding of the cost of this exercise, will carry out rostering principle studies,
yeah,
to assist the parties in developing optimal rostering practices.
Yep. Okay, so can you take us through the first obligation, which is the rostering principles?
Yes, well, we have principles and we have protocols. The principles derived out of the common acceptance that rostering had to be managed in a fair and equitable way with a good distribution of workload. And so a set of principles were defined. They are not of themselves prescriptive or binding as such.
No.
But they are expressions of the mutual good intent of the parties as to the resolution of workload issues. And also they are really trying to reflect what good practice or good management should be in any event.
Yep.
In other words, a lot of hospitals would be doing this anyway, but it was about a crystallising of it into a set of principles.
Yeah, okay. So I suppose from the first principle, when we look at it from a rostering principle perspective, it adopts the words that shift work rosters, as far as possible, should be fair and equitable, given that there's a 24/7 service obligation.
Yes.
And employees, you know, I suppose it's acknowledged as employees' work-life balance. So I suppose, does that mean that it would contemplate circumstances where a shift roster cannot be fair and equitable?
Absolutely. There is no doubt that the realities of running a pathology laboratory or huge hospital pharmacy doesn't always lend itself to ideal equitable distribution of work.
Yep.
And rostering arrangements. The primacy in all those areas, of course, is delivering the service.
Yeah, okay.
And at times that can't be done in a balanced way.
Mm. Yeah, no, I agree with that. So I suppose the second principle refers to using the Safe Work Australia's guide for managing the risk of fatigue at work. And it's used in the sense of developing rosters. Of course, the whole guide can't be used, but a portion of the guide can be used.
Yes, again, it's another principle and a resorting to a guide that has got credibility and got standing.
Yeah.
It of itself isn't binding, but it's there to guide the parties. And it will undoubtedly be resorted to when the academic study is done,
yeah,
to develop optimal rostering practices.
Yeah, okay. So could you take us through the third principle?
Well, again, it's an aspirational statement,
mm-hmm,
about the things that ought to be avoided if at all possible. And I think even in the words, where are we? Of the clause, where it talks about rostering practices that can minimise recall and overtime can significantly reduce.
Yeah.
Yes, if that were practically possible.
Yes.
But it's a recognition that if appropriate practices are done, that can have that beneficial effect.
Yeah. And the next one is, we'll probably move to the fourth principle. Can you take us through that?
Well, again, it's about an expression of intent that the health and safety of the employees must have had sufficient regard to in the design of rostering arrangements and workload distribution.
Yeah.
Again, it's a statement of the obvious.
Yes.
Good management does this,
yes.
But in the context of the negotiation, it was felt was better to give it some crystallised expression.
I think you mentioned statement of the obvious, which is very much the fifth principle, which says that clause 23 regarding part-time employees will apply to part-time employees. So I think that it probably seems inevitable that the terms of the part-time clause will apply to part-time employees.
Absolutely, but it's a long-standing industrial principle that part-time employees are entitled to know what their reasonably predictable hours are of starting and finishing times, which days and so on.
Yeah.
So again, that's embedded in law anyway,
yeah.
But it was felt that in the context of this workload management challenge, it needed re-expression
yeah.
through a principle.
Yeah, okay. And the sixth principle is very much another statement which sort of talks about the high frequency of weekend work,
yeah.
Which might impact on the employee's personal yeah. life and result in yeah. fatigue and stress.
It's really an extension of the fifth principle and indeed the second principle. That is, there's a recognition that weekend work has to be balanced out against the legitimate entitlements and expectations of employees. Against the reality of having to deliver a 24/7 service
yeah.
In the public interest.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think the seventh principle, which is really the last principle, is again another statement that ideal rostering practices would minimise weekend work, which is inclusive of on-call. Presumably,
again,
the rostering practices study proposal will...
It will deal directly with that and... it'll be some months, I think, before we have an outcome to that, assuming that the project actually can proceed in the manner that the parties currently intend it to.
Yeah, okay. So I guess we include these principles, but what do these sorts of statements, I suppose, do in practice?
Well, for practical purposes, it's about re-emphasising what people already know.
Yes.
Or it's about heightening awareness
yep.
and sensitivity to the balance to be struck between service delivery imperatives on the one hand
yeah.
and the entitlement of employees to a fair and equitable distribution of work and workload.
Yep. I think it's fair to say, Alec, that some of the feedback that we've had from members is that that may be difficult to achieve. And that's fair and reasonable. But what sort of factors from your point of view would you think contribute to it not being able to be achieved?
There'll be a variety of factors ranging from roster practices that are being driven with minimal regard to the considerations we've identified. It may well be that the current staffing arrangements and staffing complement
yeah.
is insufficient, or the skill mix is not sufficient to spread it in the way that an ideal roster might contemplate.
Yeah, and I think that goes to...
And this will vary from place to place,
of course.
Based on their history to date, what their service delivery obligations are, and whether their budget can entertain some enhancement of resources.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's certainly some significant tensions within there. I think they include a desire to limit the frequency of work on weekends and on-call and recall.
Yes.
And it does that whilst emphasising the limits on the use of part-time employees, who make up a larger proportion of staff than ever before. The principles themselves, though, would you say they're predicated on the basis that employers use their best endeavours?
Well, in any event, but it's also explicit within the principles themselves,
yes.
The notion of using best endeavours. And the expression best endeavours connotes an absence of a prescriptive obligation.
Yeah.
But it's about moving the entire workforce and management towards a state of mind and an attitude
yeah.
about how this can be better done.
Yep, okay. So at the start of the podcast, I mentioned that there's two obligations. Can we start with, I suppose, the second obligation, which is the rostering principles.
Mm-hmm.
The rostering protocols.
Protocols, yeah.
Yeah, so what the first protocol really relates to it being preferable to working on weekends rather than being a prescriptive clause, so to speak.
Again, and when you read all the protocols, and there are, I think, 7 or 8 of them.
Yes.
The language is much more prescriptive than the principles, but it also has language that talks about, as you say, about the notion of it's preferable.
Mm.
So again, and that's linked to the notion of best endeavours.
Yes.
So yes, there are prescriptive elements to these protocols. I'm not sure that we need to go through each one of them individually, but because they're pretty clear as far as they're written. But it's about complying with them, but recognising that there are practical realities where it simply may not be possible to comply.
Yes, okay.
And in that circumstance, the union will have very, very clear views that compliance is compliance. But where it is simply not possible to comply, our recommendation to every employer would be to raise this very early. Don't sit on it, don't hide it. Raise it with the union and say, here we are, here are the facts, and put them in a way that those facts can't be rebutted.
Yeah, okay. Mm. And I think that was sort of the next question, really, is that the members may think that there is a lack of compliance through those practical realities. But I think it's important to mention that there is an exception, I suppose, at the 8th protocol, which really talks about where employees at the time of the agreement being approved, whether they're on a fixed roster pattern or a pattern requested by the employer themselves, then the protocols don't apply.
That's correct. That 8th protocol, we had to ensure that was injected because we didn't want to disturb good practice, agreed practice, that was already in place.
Yep.
We were really trying to address where such practice wasn't in place or there was some doubt as to whether it was in place and thus provide guidance through the principles and the protocols.
Yeah, okay.
But there are a lot of employees who do have, as we say, individual fixed roster patterns or a contracted roster pattern. By definition, if it's a contracted roster pattern, it can't be changed unilaterally in the ordinary sense of industrial law.
Yep. Mm. Yeah, okay.
So of course, rostering can be, but if you've contracted to work from 9 to 5, 3 days a week, the employer can't unilaterally alter that.
No.
That has to be an agreed read variation.
Yep. And I think if an employee wants to work an individual roster, that may be attracting a fair bit of weekend work, I don't think we should be disturbing that either.
Absolutely not. I think the wrath of the employees would be felt if one were to try and inhibit or limit weekend work where an employee is more than happy to do it. But again, the employer has to balance that off against not allowing an employee to take an oppressive workload on board.
Yeah.
Because they're motivated through revenue or income considerations.
Yep.
So that they don't lose the obligation to provide a safe workplace in that context.
Yeah, okay. So in the context of rostering protocols, and we might have touched on it a little bit, but if they're not achievable, would it be useful for members to start to identify the factors, I suppose, that are driving that outcome?
Again, this is one of these things where employers who are tuned into their workplace will have done this anyway.
Yeah.
They'll be aware to the extent they can't comply and why.
Yep.
They just need to be a little bit more proactive about it, if you like, so that in the event of any disputation, they've done their homework up front and they're able to articulate why compliance in a certain setting can't be achieved. And to remedy that might potentially disadvantage someone else.
Yeah, of course.
So again, it's that whole issue of the employer has to find the balance between what are legitimate competing interests.
Yeah, no, agreed. Yeah. I think, and I think it goes to what we spoke about at the start of the podcast, that, I mean, this area would have to be linked to the study proposal, and particularly the impediments.
It's explicitly linked to that study. The whole context of this agreement was very much about addressing workload.
Yeah.
And that has resulted, as you know, in the backfill protocols.
Yep.
The study for rostering, a rostering practice. And this is all done in the context of very close consultation with our reference group.
Yep.
So this wasn't some industrial deal hammered out in a smoke-filled room. Yeah. This is the product of very close consultation with our members. And whilst they themselves recognise this may have some future cost implications, they were very supportive of developing this set of rules, and in particular developing a study that, if it comes up with alternate studies that have cost implications, they're in a position to then seek appropriate funding adjustments to meet that new obligation.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it also goes to the expansion of the workload clause, particularly when we're talking about staffing and allocation of work.
Yes.
It's all interlinked to that.
They're all those matters are very tightly interlinked, and you can't read one in isolation of the other.
Yeah, of course. All right. Thank you, Alec.
Okay, it's a pleasure.